There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this election day. I guess less than 7 hours now left till they close the polls on this primary runoff election day. The only thing I can add, well, I can add in a lot, actually. From the text line and emails, y'all have been telling me, think everybody down to the last person, that things went pretty quickly wherever they voted. All right, so this is... Baldwin County. This is also Mobile County. People saying that the voting went quickly where they were. But I'm also seeing that the turnout was okay where y'all went. That looked like the numbers were higher than at least maybe some had predicted. I know this. I went and voted just about an hour and a half ago or so. And moved quickly getting in there and talked on the way out. And they told me, yeah, that actually this morning was slow, they said. But the numbers mid-morning had picked up and already had broken, at least for my precinct or voting poll there, over 10% turnout already. So there you go. Those of us that had it in the single digits now statewide, that still may be true, but down here trending to above double digits at least. Listen, you gotta be happy with what you get. If we get 20%, I will be ecstatic. And by the way, the voting procedure worked just fine, walking in with the masks, doing the whole nine yards. And I'll say this, the pen situation. The pens were there. The person handing out the pen when I walked in was busy with somebody else, so I kept on going because I had my pen in my pocket. And I had the black ink pen there to do the marking. So you can bring your own pen, but they are offering you, they have to be black ink when you fill out the Scantron and get it done. I think a total of a 5-minute turnaround for me. But yeah, they were telling me at my precinct already over 10%. So turnout double digits there. All right, coming up this hour, we'll talk more about what's going on today, also talk with you. But some perspective, I think, will be pretty interesting. Coming up at 12:30, Wes Lambert. Now, Wes was one of, remember, Wes was part of the debate that took place back in November for the AL1 Republican primary. He was one of the candidates running. Now that is pared down to Jerry Carl and Bill Hightower. We're going to get perspective on this today from Wes Lambert, somebody who ran against both of those men in the primary. So we'll talk with him about that coming up at 12:30. Plus, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, to kind of paint the picture for us around the state of Alabama with what's happening today in turnout. Plus, what's also going on today. And I've been monitoring this. So they're meeting right now. State Board of Education is meeting. And we, by the way, let me take a second here to remind you of the FM Talk 106.5 online opinion poll question. You go over there to fmtalk1065.com. You'll see the 1-800-GOT-JUNK logo, and then you'll see the question, do you feel safe sending your children back to school this fall? 91% of y'all say yes. 9% say no. This is very contrary to national numbers and even state numbers. I think it's interesting where the state numbers, even among, I think, Republicans were 53% unsure about schools going back. But in our poll, overwhelmingly, supermajority don't have any issue with the kids going back to school. So what I was getting to is you go back and this State Board of Education meeting is going on and they're discussing what the state's going to do about... let me see this one note here. Because Mary Sell was reporting this and said the proposal calls for 300 additional school nurses. 300 additional school nurses to get things open back up. This is one of the things you look at public schools that are going to say, well, if we have to open up, if it's a mandate that we open up, we need more money to open up. And how is that going to come in form of, is it going to be hundreds of new school nurses? What are they going to do to make it to where the kids can go back to school? And like I said, y'all are overwhelmingly pretty solid on your feeling of getting the kids back to school like next month, but the polling out there doesn't show that you're in the majority. I think that's interesting. All right, we'll do this. We can grab a call here, and then we'll run to the news break because I want to get Todd Stacey on with Alabama Daily News. So, yeah, we'll cover two things. We'll cover voting around the state and kind of what's going on here for getting schools back. Because you have story. Now, California is making the most news today because there's two big school systems there in California say they're not going to open back up. The president's saying they're going to withhold federal dollars if they don't open back up. That's not the entire budget, right? It's just a percentage of it. Is it? Should it be up to the states? I mean, it's interesting how this argument, you know, when a conservative wants to make an argument, and I'm one of them, wants to make an argument about, you know, limited federal government, we make an argument about states' rights. Well, I still make that one, but shouldn't you make that same argument then if California wants to do something dumb about their schools? Shouldn't they have the right to do something dumb about their schools? Shouldn't, I mean, do you, if you're bothered by federal overreach when it's something that's, you know, your sacred cow, and then in this case, you're not okay with it in California. I don't know. But we'll see. See what it does here. I'll tell you what, Lana, okay, I'll take one here before the news break, and then we'll go to news and we'll come back and hopefully get Todd on with us. This is Cade in Mobile up first. Hey, Cade.
Hey, Cade. Yes, sir. This is Cade. I just calling in.
Hey, man.
I mean, I hear you say you find it interesting that they're going to have to hire 300 or so.
Well, that's what they're proposing.
Nurses for the schools to reopen and all that.
That's what they're proposing.
But nobody's talking about, when we were having all the school shootings, about trying to get a armed, sworn officer of the law in there to protect
What do you mean nobody was talking about it? I was talking about it a lot, Cade.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is nobody's talking about there hadn't been any mass shootings since this COVID started, but now they want to go back and possibly...
Well, if we don't have
everybody.
The kids in school, it's thank goodness, you know, that reduces the chance of a school shooting if there are no children in school.
Right.
So you're saying the solution to school shootings is just not to have the kids in school?
No, the solution is they should have put an armed, sworn officer of the law in each school. And if they also need to hire nurses, if they want to go back to school, then do that as well. But just hire nurses to keep people sick. They're going to get sick not only in the school, but also outside the school.
Yeah, okay? I don't know how this works.
They're not looking at the big picture, okay? That everybody's already upset and mad and sitting at the home and just thinking of what ways to do stuff.
You know what I bet? I bet, Cade? Remember that the governor has... Remember how the state of Alabama, we got the billion in federal aid through that act? And then the governor had her wrestling match with the legislature, and she's holding on to the power to make those calls. I wonder if we're going to find things like this, because we can spend... You know, you can't just spend the money on general fund. It has to be spent on, what they say, like coronavirus response. So I wonder if the governor's figured out how to... You know, get 200 or 300 additional nurses on in Alabama and have the federal government pay for it. I wonder if that's not what's up here. Might be. Okay, appreciate the call. Run to the news break and then back, hopefully, with Todd Stacey. He might be in voting somewhere. Where are you, Todd?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Maybe we send out a bulletin on him. Dalton, I don't know. Todd Stacey, if we can find him, get him back on. He was doing today, drifted off into his polling place, not to be seen again. What was happening there? By the way, too, just I honestly thought about taking a picture, and then I went, "Nah, that's rude." It's rude to do, but I'll tell you the story. That's kind of what we do in radio, anyway, of why you need to get off your duff and go out and vote today. There's a man going into my polling place when I was heading in, and I found out from his discussion that he's 94. And he was moving, you know, should I be so lucky to ever make it to that man's age? I hope to be doing as well as he was doing. But he was moving very slowly. Had a cane, moving very slowly. And he walks from the parking lot, step by step, and then goes down these, I don't know, probably 10 steps or so, down to another level to go into the gymnasium there where we vote. And this man took him a long time. You could tell it was with effort. It took him to go, I'm sure, to get in his vehicle, drive there, and make the walk into the polling place, you know, with the mask, a whole nine, and go through it. But he was there, and he wasn't missing that. I'm sure it would have been so much easier for that man at his age to not leave his house and not go to the polling place and not do it and just say, you know, it's a primary runoff. It's not a big deal. But he did. He did. So if any of you are going, I'm just not feeling good today, or I'm tired, or I have to park and walk. You know what? Just picture this man I'm describing. And he did it. And so can you. All right? So be part of it. And like I said, they were looking at, over 10%. Over 10% turnout at my polling place already. My buddy Hal says, if they don't open schools, will they even need the federal funds? Hal, leave it to my buddy Hal to have, like, the smartest question of the day. Hal, great point. Like, if California's saying, well, we're not gonna open, but we went, you don't need the federal funds if you're not going to open. You know, I'm sure they'll say it's something with the school meals or something like that, Hal. But you do. You make a solid point, Hal, on that. The school nurse thing, I got to believe that it's... Remember we talked about this a bunch. It was like $1.6, $1.7 billion in federal money coming to the state, but it had to be spent on coronavirus response. And we were talking about rural broadband at one point, remember? And maybe prison hospitals in the system that could also be used for overflow or something like that. We talked about it, but I don't know this for a fact. I'm just kind of reading through Maricel Quillen's reporting on what's going on with this Board of Education meeting today, because it's not even a regular meeting. It's like some of the people are doing Zoom meeting. Some of them are there in this state meeting. But she didn't say this, but I'm reading through her reporting, and this is just a guess, because like this one portion here, it said, State Board of Education proposal calls for 300 additional school nurses. The 2020-2021 education budget has $34 million for school nurses, a $1 million increase over the current year. I just wonder if Governor Ivey will say, okay, I've got this money allocated, right? And out of these billions of dollars, $1 billion coming to the state, I can hire school nurses, because that's definitely defendable if you're trying to defend the spending. Because remember, you can't just put it in the general fund. You can't just do whatever. The money is earmarked from the federal government, and we have to use it by the end of December to be used for coronavirus response. So I think I'm going to guess there. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just reading the reporting and getting a feeling here that's that's probably an idea of using that CARES Act funding to put in, and probably pretty solid thing to do there. Now, what happens going forward? Do we allocate enough money to have that many school nurses going on school year after school year after school year, or do we have it, is it a one-time deal? But I know at least if that's what they're doing, it seems, in everything I've read, to fit the definition of how the state can spend those dollars. All right, to the phones at 343-0106, and Darlene is in Mobile. Hey, Darlene.
Hey, John. I just wanted to let you know there was hardly any people out there voting, and those sorry so-and-sos, if I could say worse on my line, I would. You know, I mean,
where'd you vote?
I saw people that were handicapped in one way or the other, mm-hmm. And I was in a wheelchair.
God bless you.
We did it.
You know what? And that's let that be what Darlene's telling y'all, and that 94-year-old man that I was standing there with, who voted. If I hear anybody say, "Oh, I can't get it," so you have a wheelchair, and at the same time, you somehow made it your day to get there and go and vote.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. I'm 76 years old. My husband and I have always voted, and I just don't see. And there's just, it's a crime to look at the place and see how few people are there, and all those people get all worked up, not worked up, but the people who are working there, but their time.
Yes, they do.
And that, you know, that makes them feel like, okay, well, I don't know if I want to do this again.
Well, I think
nobody's going to turn out.
What we need is more Darlenes out there.
Well,
more Darlenes.
Certainly do it.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I tell you, the man I was, Darlene, in a wheelchair going to do it, the man that I was walking with there, I mean, moving very slow. God bless him. I mean, I hope I'm alive at 94, let alone moving at his speed. But he did. He did it. Going down the big stairs with the cane and the whole nine. And it just, you look at that and then you go, if I see somebody going, oh, well, you know, man, I had a tough workout. We did lower body yesterday. And I, shut up. Shut up. Let's see. Ricky in Mobile next. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, Sean. Lady can call me whatever she wants. But what do you do when you don't like any of these crooks? How do you feel about when you vote these crooks in? Everything that's going on. And you vote all the time, and this is what we get.
So what's the option? You're saying you don't vote?
There's an Andy Griffith show that... Oh, Andy and Barney, they go and grab this guy, and they talk him into running for something. Guy don't want to do it. A leader don't want to be a leader. A leader just does it by itself. And people, these people that are advertising themselves, you shouldn't even have to advertise. If you're so great to be in this position, you don't have to advertise yourself.
So people should just know about you and go put your name down.
Man, there could be groups of people that nominate somebody that didn't have all this money, didn't go out and pander to the richest of businesses to get all these money. What do you do when you don't like anybody? What do you do, Sean?
You vote for the...
Tell me what you want to.
You vote for the lesser...
I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know, I have never been 100% on anybody. I don't worship any person. So, I mean, every person I've ever voted for is not that I'm 100% in lockstep with them. But they are the best out of the choices given. And it's funny, Ricky, you're talking about what do you do? So I had this theory. I hadn't talked about it in years, but it was my... I always just said it was the van with no windows presidential election. And maybe we could have one window like the A-team van. But what we would do is kind of what you're saying, Ricky. People would nominate through some process across 50 states. We would nominate people that are wise, people that we think would do a good job. All right, then we have a secret committee, and through that...
Who nominated them? That's the thing. They threw their own name into that.
No, but let me finish this, Ricky. Let me finish. So people, not the candidates, nominate people. Like they'd find somebody in their community. They say, that person's good. So they nominate and they nominate. We have a process of all 50 states puts these names up. And then they get debated in a forum. When we go through that process and find the person that we agree that doesn't even know they're being talked about is the right person, then that person, the way I picture it is, they're usually out in their front yard in my mind doing some weed. Doing whatever, and a van pulls up with Secret Service agents, and they walk out and they say, hello, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, you've been nominated to be President of the United States for the next 4 years. If you decline, you'll go to prison, federal prison, nice prison, but federal prison for 4 years. If you accept, your business will be protected. Your family will be protected. You could come back and take over your job the same as it was when you left 4 years before. But for the next 4 years, you serve the country as president, or you go to the federal prison and play Parcheesi or whatever for 4 years. But that's how we'd do it. We'd nominate people behind their back and then select them and make the choice whether they're going to serve the Republic or not.
Yeah, something like that.
That's it.
I like it. Something like that.
The van pulls up.
Prison thing and stuff. But,
well, do you have to motivate them? Who's going to say yes?
An honorable person that doesn't pander to multi-billionaires to give them money to run because they owe favors to them all the time. Man, all of them are crooks, and we vote for them. I don't like any of them. You know, we're just talking about an ex-county commissioner or hopefully and... You know, some dude that's been in trying to run for all kind of things for the longest time and has not made it. And, you know, come on, man. No, none of these people are honorable.
none of them. They're all crooks. They really are. That county commissioner ain't done. He's been my county commissioner for too long, and I'm glad he's doing something else.
Right, Ricky, up against a news break.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5. And, a lot of text here. I shouldn't have even gotten that man. I should have gotten the man's name. But, you know, when you're voting and people feel funny about that, it's an amazing thing, though, to watch that man at 94. And there's spies out there. Somebody obviously was out there. You see that, Dalton, on the text line when I was out there. They were spying on me. They saw the same guy. That's good. So you know what I'm talking about. It's a really great story. I think look at something like that or Darlene's call. Darlene in the wheelchair getting there and not missing a vote. And that's what it's about, y'all. Get out there and do your duty. Yeah, and somebody's saying that this is John. John said, if you don't vote, then you get the government you deserve. John, you are accurate, but not complete. Because if you vote, you get the government you deserve too. If you don't vote, you get the government you deserve. If you do vote, you get the government you deserve. All right. And one of the discussions that came up about, you know, how somebody gets into the mix, how people find themselves in the line of running for office, it's a good chance to get that answered firsthand because one of the candidates in AL1's Republican primary, as a part of our debate, talked with us on the show quite a bit and was one of the ones not in today's runoff. That's Wes Lambert. And Wes Lambert's joining us now to talk more about it. Hey, Wes.
Yeah, hey, Sean, how are you today?
I'm good. So, yeah, you're a candidate in this race, and now we're watching today's runoff. Talk to us for a second. Ricky laments the fact that the amount of money and favors and all that that people believe people have to obtain to get on a ballot, to win a race.
Right.
What's your take on this? This was your first foray into politics.
Yes, my first foray for sure, and thoroughly enjoyed it, but it takes so much money to get your name out, and especially in a district our size. You know, we were thinking, for us in that election, we were thinking $500,000, which is, you know, a lot of money. And you have to go around and ask for money. And it was hard for me to ask for money. People look at my FEC numbers and see that. But, you know, our guys, Mr. Hightower and Mr. Carl, they're up around the $1.5 million now with this race, maybe a little bit more. It's hard to imagine that amount of money in a political race, but that's what it's taking for these two guys to get there. And everybody's seen the commercials. We're tired of the commercials. You know, we didn't have much of the mudslinging when the first primary happened, but it's gotten a lot worse since.
What about that? You know, I was talking about this morning with Quinn Hillier, and I was wondering how much of mudslinging comes from the candidates themselves or the way I picture it, campaign managers. It'll come in and say, listen, that's all great. I know you're you're above all this, and that's cute there. Tap you on the head. Do you want to win this race? Then if you want to win this race, you better listen to me. This is how you win a race. You know, I wonder how much of that goes on. Did you see any of that at your level?
We didn't as much in the first primary. You know, there were some talk that I was in favoritism with Jerry and so forth, and I've become friends with Jerry and Chris, you know, from the get-go, because I've known them having the dumbwaiter downtown, and they come in and eat and so forth. But to answer your question on that part, I think so much comes from the campaign manager, like you said, but also from these super PACs, Club for Growth. As so many of us have seen the commercials that are paid for by Club for Growth, we've gotten the mailers on Jerry paid for by Club for Growth. You know, he's a red-handed, blue-faced swamp monster. I mean, it's all this stuff, and I was talking to a couple of guys about that. He goes, you know, that's really giving Jerry more FaceTime and more name recognition than he could ever ask for. Because his name is all over the place right now, and they're right. Because it's all about name recognition, which I learned in politics.
But
and I was guilty of it. When you go to the poll, well, I know that name. I'm going to vote for him. It might not be the right person or the best person, but you know the name.
Oh, that's true. That's been borne out in a lot of studies on this. One of the worries would be, though, okay, so you're running the campaign, you're not going to mudsling, but here comes a pack that is mudslinging against you, right? And it's for the benefit of another candidate. And yes, right. you're getting name recognition. But I got to tell you, as much as I would hold true, you know, to turning the other cheek, like the Bible says, idea of being the better person, you hear it a couple times, and I'm just not perfect, because I'd lash out, I'd push back.
Right.
I couldn't help it.
It's hard to take the high road, I can tell you that.
I mean, you know, you'd want to...
Choose your demeanor. It's hard to take it and not come back on it.
Right. I mean, if somebody's saying... And if something's patently false, I mean, it seems like you'd want to react to it, but you would have to... And in doing that, then you're going to be... then you're engaging in the mudslinging.
Right. Exactly. And then it comes down, do you want to engage back, like with another commercial, and get more name out there, or do you want to stay back? And let's go to the Sessions Tuberville stuff. I haven't seen Tommy in weeks. I hadn't talked to him. I don't know where he is.
I don't think anybody knows where he is. No, and not just the debate thing. He has been, and I've said this the other day, and this not just me, because I know it's easy to, you know, talk about the relationship that doesn't seem to be there between the Tuberville campaign and myself, but a right. bunch of other people in the state, in these group text, and they're all saying, what happened? We can't get him. And yeah. This has been a couple weeks ago that we can't get him. I guess it's that play, you know, hold on to the lead, play defense kind of game. Governor Ivey did the same thing.
Yeah, for sure, exactly the same with her. And I just don't like that strategy. That's just my two cents. I mean, if you're in a primary for a state senate or congressional bid, I think you should be out there amongst the constituents, the people that you're going to represent.
I agree in the spirit of what you're saying, but let me turn it around and be completely pragmatic, okay? Just if the job is to win, if it's important to win, then don't do anything that could risk that win. Don't do any. I'm not saying that I like that. That's not where my heart is.
No,
but if I'm looking at it through the strategy of you're running for this office, you obviously want to win. Okay. Well, let me tell you right now, the worst thing you could do when you're holding on to this lead is do anything to risk it. And if you get out there, whatever, if you lose a point or two because you're not visible and you're not campaigning, it's a lot less of a risk than the possibility of stepping in it and losing 10 or 15% support.
No, you're fully right, and if Mr. Tuberville would have debated Mr. Sessions or Senator Sessions, it would have been tough for Tommy to do that, because
yes.
Jeff has been up there in the Munston for years. So, I mean, he would really, like you said, be going in on the wrong side of it.
Let's ask this question. People are, you know, always talking about the money in politics that you mentioned there. When you go and you fundraise, whether it's for $500,000 or $1.5 million or whatever it is, you're fundraising for a campaign. How often do you get the request for influence, even if it's not, you know, even if it's not direct, even if it's not a, hey, Wes, if you win, I'm going to need a, you know, this appointment or this thing to happen or this business thing. How many times is it just kind of, well, it'd sure be good if you were elected because, you know, I'm really invested in such and such? I mean, how much of that do you hear? Is it never? Is it 1 out of 10 times? Is it 5 out of 10 times?
Okay, and I won't put names out there.
No, I'm just asking generally.
The first one I went to in this, because I went to school with him, and I went and told him, he knew I was running, and he said, well, my contacts in D.C. will keep me informed on how you do. And I asked about not endorse me, but assisting in money. And he says, no, you know, I've already bought the other three candidates in this race. So, I mean, you know, when I looked at my campaign manager, I said, hey, you know,
I've already bought the other three
candidates because they were all politicians, or they'd all been politicians in Mr. Hightower's case, you know. So
already bought the other three candidates in the race.
Already bought the other three. I can't compete with that because I've never been a candidate before. And I just came in as a business person with morals and ethics. And it was just hard for me to ask for money from a lot of individuals because we work so for our money. I just tried to do it the right way.
Well,
I tried.
And it's good for you to have done the right thing. I'll flip it around the same way I do when people get so angry at lobbyists. I said, listen, lobbyists don't bother me in the fact that I know what their motivations are. I get their motivation. It is clear what their motivation is as a lobbyist, right? They have, as long as they disclose who they're lobbying for, they lobby for, these people give them money to try to get better outcomes for their businesses. I get that. That's a understandable thing. The danger comes in politicians agreeing to it. It's not the business that decides they're going to give money to a candidate. It's the candidate that accepts it and then does what's required, or the PAC that gives money and then then attaches strings, marionette strings to a possible government official.
Right. And when you look at that, and Clover Grove, I'm in Montgomery right now, heading back, but they bought Barry Moore up here and they bought Bill Hightower. They both got in bed with them. And Clover Grove is nothing more than a lot of, how the article said, zillionaires that are trying to run their agenda through congressmen and senators the way they want it. Clover Grove is not for they're for open borders. They're against the farm bill. When I was up there and met with them, the defense bill was coming out last July. That same week I was there, they asked me how I'd vote for it. I told them I'd vote for it because of Austell. Well, they said that they didn't approve that, and I told them I was not their candidate then. So there's so many problems with Club for Growth getting into our morals down here and the way we live life. And I can't support anybody that is taking money from them. Because it's not an alpha. It's a super PAC of billionaires and millionaires that's giving money to these candidates to do their agenda through them.
Yeah, I think when people understand who all the players are, we've tried to do that here with this radio station over the years. Yep. When there's a PAC that gets in to say, here's their motivations, here's their track record elsewhere, here's what they seem to try to get for outcomes. Once that information is out there, then if they want to play in an election, I don't think it's as big a deal. I think what scares me is how many people will see an ad or an allegation made by an outside group and not know their motivation. Think that's some group that has just put together money just out of the goodness of their heart to sign on for a candidate. I mean, they're just doing it because they really like this person, and I think if the information's out there, then the effect, the danger from those PACs is severely lessened.
Yeah, you can't tell me someone put $1.5 million into a candidate that candidate is not going to do what they're told to do. That's a lot of money.
Well, here's what I've heard is that you're told that if you go rogue on them, right, if you do that and take their money and then get elected and don't do what they want, they tell you immediately that we're already working on the candidate that's going to run against you. And especially, in that short cycle in the House of Representatives, you could lose your job just, in a year's time.
Exactly, because it's their agenda and they're wanting to push it through you.
And so if you're not going to do it,
then you're safe.
Yeah, if you're not going to do it, we'll find somebody who will. Hey, can you hold on a second?
I'd love to, yes, sir.
All right, coming right back, more with Wes Lambert. Of course, he was one of the candidates running in AL1 in the primary, did not matriculate on into what we're talking about today with the runoff, but his perspective running for this office, and good chance to get some behind the scenes from Wes. We'll come right back and talk with him some more. Reminder two, Cam Marston and What's Working Special Edition coming up at 1.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. Welcome back. Let me address something. Swoosh on the text line. You're right. So said the news, said voting was tomorrow. So this was like it's like dominoes gone bad, Swoosh. So with all due respect to my friends over at WKRG, they sent us the wrong newscast at the beginning of the noon hour. Okay, the wrong one. They sent us one from yesterday that ran. I said, whoa, it was like yesterday's afternoon one or whatever. And I said, that's wrong. So we'll replace it with the newscast that we were running from WKRG mid-morning. because we get newscasts in the morning, mid-morning, midday, the afternoon, and evening. So we get these updates throughout the day. So I grabbed it because the show had already started and just slung in what I thought was the right replacement newscast. It was going to be a little bit older, but it was today's from mid-morning. Yeah, I grabbed yesterday's. So, Sush, thank you. So if y'all heard that, yes, that was not correct. That was yesterday's. Yeah, I'm in here trying to do too many things at a time and just assuming that I had the right newscast as delivered, and I did not. All right. Get right back to our conversation with Wes Lambert. Somebody said here, per Supreme Court and Citizens United, money is speech. Absolutely. You know, and that's one thing. Consistently, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with people wanting to get outcomes for their businesses. My problem is the politicians that will acquiesce to it. They have the right to give money to candidates. They have a right, but we have to have candidates. They'll go, well, that's cute and everything, and if you want to give me the money, that's fine, but I'm still going to vote the way I'm going to vote. And if that happens, they get the money, then fine. It's a lot easier as a pinch point to have politicians that will do the right thing than try to regulate the who, what, when, where, and why of every private entity, or in the cases of teachers' unions, a public entity, that wants to give money to a certain candidate. Wes, what do you think? I mean, don't you think that's the easier place to tackle this is at the candidate level than the business level?
Yeah, I mean, you accept money, you know, $100, $500, $1,000, but you got to let them know, you know, thank you, but you're still going to vote the way you feel you need to vote for your district and not the way they want you to vote. I think because it's not their seat, it's not Jerry's bill seat, it's the district seats, and you got to vote what's right for that district.
Yep. And that is, while there's a lot, and I remember asking you all this during the debate, you know, that there's a lot of agreement with President Trump, but there are some things, and I got to tell you, I know it shocks some people that want to be in lockstep, but when I hear, and it's not just President Trump, it's whomever is president, if I hear a candidate say, hey, I like a lot about what our president's doing, but there are a few things that I am going to disagree with because I have to keep the AL1. You know, as number one in this. So there's a right. Few times, and it could, you know, who knows what those issues are, but for people to say, yeah, I'm open that there may be some scenario down the road where I might disagree with President Trump on something specific.
And we had one with the Airbus tariffs.
Yep.
Where, you know, I disagreed with him, and I think Jerry and Chris did as well, and I don't remember how Bill went on it, but I think you got to take care of your district, and Airbus, also, they're very important to our livelihood and the way we are in South Alabama.
Well said.
So that was one when we had happened that we all disagreed.
Okay.
You know, with his spin on it.
Before we wrap up, people are asking here, so were you in Montgomery politicking?
No, I was not. My son actually had a golf tournament up there at Arrowhead. Actually came in third place, so I was proud of him for that.
Good job.
So we're heading back home now to vote and get Mama and go vote. So,
there you go. Very nice. So get a little bit of golf and then a little civic responsibility.
Exactly. And, you know, with my youngest, or my oldest, she's 18 going to UAB, but she and I did softball from 6 to 18. So, and now it's his turn, so I try to take him and enjoy time with him as much as I can.
Well, I sure appreciate you being on with us today. We're going to get you back on because people really are digging the kind of insight from, you know, somebody who's run for office before. So plan to come back and talk with us again real soon.
And I love you allowing me to come on. It's a blast. And, you know, as soon as we get the restaurants open, the dumbwaiter, I hope people start coming out to eat.
Well, I'm coming. I know that. So save me a place right back there by the kitchen, okay?
Yes, sir. Will do. Well, thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Wes Lambert, check it in. So the candidate for Congress for AL1. He did not make it into the runoff, but to hear his perspective as well as candidates, I think is pretty refreshing. All right, coming up in just minutes, it's Cam Marston and What's Working, special edition right here on FM Talk 106.5.